Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride and deep within my breast I thrill to see, O glory faint, the breeze.
Cole Porter, great singer, Mabel Mercer, died today.
Then the Danish king, the only leader in the occupied countries when the Nazis overran Europe in World War II, he stayed behind. The Queen of Holland and her daughter, Wilhelmina and Juliana, fled to England. A lot of leaders fled to England. The French got caught, Duladier, and I think and then of course their generals ended up in French in the Nazi captivity. But Charles Christian X used to ride his horse every day, wouldn't let the Nazis intimidate him, and he stayed in Denmark. And the Danes resisted. They hid their Jews. They resisted Hitler's forces, the occupying armies. And he was a stalwart monarch during a time of great trial for the Danish people. They were supposed to be a model Nordic nation, but they resisted the Nazis. And then we had, let me get the other verb to you here, flip page. We had, now among the deaths today, the other deaths, Muhammad Ayub Khan, he was the general dictator of Pakistan. Brigadier Engel knew him, and we talked about him in an interview, which I will play Friday because it's very relevant. He was a guy who, Ayub Khan, came to the United States and lectured the United States Congress telling us that we had to support them. He later died in a mysterious plane crash, and we think that he may have been, terminated with extreme displeasure by his own people. Then this actor with an unusual voice, Cecil Parker, English actor, he died today. The great Mexican actor, Cantinflas, died today. And then we had, of the events today, this is very important for the Australians, Captain Cook arrived in what is called New South Wales, which is what is the name of the state in Australia where Sydney Harbor. And that's where, after the American Revolution, this happened in 1770, after the American Revolution, the English had to find a place to dump their prisoners that they were transporting. It took 6 months to transport these Irish who were, and poor English, and women, and prostitutes, and thieves, all kinds of people were transported to Australia. Horrible treatment, and there's a great book out, a landmark book of Australian history called, I think, The Far Shore. We'll talk about it some more. And this is interesting because there are states now in the United States which are talking about they have the right, in effect, to secede. And in 1777, New York State adopted a constitution as an independent state. This is really interesting. I don't know what happened after that. We should look into that. In 1799, Napoleon decreed that Jerusalem was for the Jews. This is interesting, and this was before the Balfour Declaration. It's appropriate for Passover week. And then 1836, Wisconsin was declared a territory. Some people think it should remain that, given all the upheaval that's been there with the legislators fleeing the state and going to, of all places, Illinois. And then 1853, Harriet Tubman, a black woman, she started the Underground Railroad, and there's schools and monuments named after her. 1861, Robert E. Lee, who was asked to command the Union armies, he decided he was probably the finest soldier to graduate from West Point. He also served in the Mexican War with people like Grant, General Taylor, Winfield Scott, Jefferson Davis. A lot of these people were veterans of the Mexican War. He resigned from the Union Army, and because he said his loyalty was to his state, Virginia, was more important than allegiance to the United States. And then we had in 1871 the third enforcement of the right of the president, so he said, to suspend habeas corpus. We still have that argument today, and it affects people like Stephen Nery, who's going into the 16th year of illegal imprisonment as a result of a kangaroo trial in San Francisco and forged documents, intimidation of witnesses, and we'll get into that some more. Of all things, talking about San Francisco, in 1872, the San Francisco Bar was established. Some people think they should keep passing it because there's something they will not dismiss or disbar corrupt lawyers, especially those who are politically or sexually connected. excuse me, I still have this cold. That's one of the reasons I was off. Then of the other events, Pierre in 1902, Pierre Curie and Marie Curie discovered radium. Pierre, his famous movie with Greer Garson and Walter Pigeon, Madame Curie, 1940s movie. And Pierre was killed by a horse-drawn carriage wagon that broke. The horses broke away, and he got run down in the streets of Paris. Marie Curie was the only woman to win two Nobel Prizes in science and physics, and I think medicine. And she died of caught cancer from radium, and she had a daughter. They had a daughter. Was also a scientist. And then we had one of the most infamous union strikes in U.S. history, 1914, the Ludlow Mines in Littleton, Colorado, where 33 striking miners were killed by the soldiers. They sent the army in to suppress the strike. And then in 1917, Lenin declared that Russia was the free land of the world. I don't know where he got that, so I guess he created Pravda. And then 1934, getting back to Hitler, Himmler became the inspector of the Prussian secret police, and in fact he became the J. Edgar Hoover, in a sense, of all the police forces in Nazi Germany. And then when the Nazi armies occupied Europe, sections of Europe, he had his secret police all over the place with total jurisdiction and authority to do what they wanted, when they wanted, and how they wanted. And then here's interesting for the Canadians. In 1968, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, he was Scotch and French-Canadian. He also was a lawyer, went to Harvard in law school. Not law school, but he studied at Harvard. He became Canadian Prime Minister, and he was a young guy, and he did so many things that they normally stayed. Canadians coined the phrase Trudeau-mania. I remember that. We were up there for Expo. Then in the United States Supreme Court declared that busing could be used to desegregate places that were segregated in the United States. And then they also declared that the insignia or the motto on New Hampshire's license plates, live free or die, was legal. And then this is interesting. It's important about Social Security. And when Reagan became president, he signed a $165 billion bailout for Social Security. We'll get into that another time. And then in 1999, we had the infamous Columbine High School shooting where 13 students and teachers were killed, and 23 people, students, were wounded. Now, a reason today I did an interview with Professor Jim Gleason, G-L-E-E-S-O-N, not related to Jackie Gleason. He has 30 years art teaching experience. He's an artist himself. And since this is Hitler's birthday, we are not glorifying Hitler, but we discussed the proposition that had Hitler, who applied to the Vienna after World War One, which was gas, he applied to the Vienna Art Academy, and he was rejected as he didn't have the talent, apparently. So we jokingly said, well, maybe we should hang that guy out to dry, the registrar or dean of admissions, because we suppose that had Hitler been accepted as an artist instead of later becoming an author and a troublemaker, an instigator in Germany, maybe the world would have been spared the scourge of Nazism. So here's our interview with, and it's titled, Politicians, Public Figures, From Hitler to Obama, A Historical Perspective on Art.
All right, we're talking to Professor James Gleason, native of San Francisco, and he's waiting for this hard rain to go away so he can sell some paintings. Welcome to the program, Jim. Now, I gave you a disc with some paintings of prominent, they're all dead, politicians, public figures, that two of them most people didn't realize that they painted, although they did it later in life. I think Churchill did it throughout his life as a form of recreation. From what I gave you, the one painting by J. Edgar Hoover, Eisenhower, it's kind of hard to see what he painted, but he was painting. And then the Churchill series of paintings, and he did many, I understand. What's your opinion of them as painters? Would you take them as students?
Well, yeah, I definitely take all three of them as students. They're when I looked at Eisenhower seemed to be a little bit more of a kind of like an illustrator, and I understand that he kind of worked kind of the paint by number aspect. It was kind of rigid and structured, but he wasn't too bad. I mean, he was kind of on a lower level just simply because he didn't work long enough at it. When I looked at J. Edgar Hoover's work, it was very tight and hard edged, and I think it might have represented his personality, maybe. Although I didn't know the man, just from what I heard, I didn't know that Hoover painted.
I came across it quite by accident.
Very interesting,
yeah.
Especially historical figures. I was familiar that Churchill painted, and one of the reasons that he painted was he suffered from depression, and his
the Black Dog of Depression.
Black
was that
Dog
his
of Depression, and his paintings don't reflect depression at all. So you'd think if he was a depressive, that his paintings are very colorful, reasonably kind of impressionistic. He worked, I think, with a friend of his that he met in World War I. He was a painter, and he would visit France and stuff with him and paint on location. But he painted throughout his career, I think. He didn't paint much in World War II, obviously.
Now, what about Adolf Hitler's?
Well, Hitler's work was fascinating simply because Hitler really wanted to be an artist. He wanted to be a great painter. Hitler was
even a painter.
He wanted to be a painter, and he just wasn't a painter. His watercolors, I guess, are his most famous works, but they're basically only famous simply because of his name and the notoriety that he generated historically. He was obviously, everybody knows that he was kicked out of the Academy at an early age.
He wasn't even accepted, was
he? Yeah, he was never even accepted, and the person that kicked him out told him that he had an affinity for architecture, but that he probably wasn't going to be a good painter. Hitler drew fairly well. He was a draftsman, and he actually worked as a draftsman a little bit after he was expelled or never accepted into the Academy. But his paintings really never amounted to much, and they're amateurish at best. But I think he did a lot of them, and I think he sold a lot of them.
He did postcards also.
Yeah, he did a lot of postcards, and a lot of people collected them. And I think there's a number of them that are in the Pentagon War Museum. I think they found hundreds of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Hitler came to power, he came back, and he had people go out and collect.
Oh, yeah, they
paintings,
had
right,
museums, and it was all this Germanic, very muscular, big buxom women, and uncircumcised men. There was a very interesting thing about that.
Yeah, he was, fascinating.
Got to be not Semitic.
Just don't cross
them. Well, now, I guess we were joking about this in an earlier interview that had Hitler been accepted in the Vienna Art Academy or the Academy of Art in Vienna, would we have had him as a person who helped instigate World War II?
Well, yeah, I mean, he might not have kicked out the Hindenburg. I mean, he might not have.
Well, Hindenburg died.
Well, Hindenburg died. That's right.
Yeah, and then he moved in with von Papen.
And he moved in. He was good.
Yeah,
but
he was positioned.
But yeah, I mean, maybe the guy that the director of the Vienna Academy, he should be put up on trial. Who knows?
A name that will live in infamy and ignominy. Now, what about Joe Stalin?
I don't know. Was he a painter?
He would, when there were periodic and regular purges with the NKVD, the predecessor of the KGB, he would, if there were any paintings of opponents or people that he offed or had sent to the gulags, they were painted out.
Really? Oh,
yes.
So he kind of kept tally.
He did have an instinct for removing people or doctoring photo.
Paintings. That's interesting. Well, I know that he created. He was kind of like Hoover, maybe.
Very rigid.
It was that Stalinistic style of architecture. Mm-hmm. I know, which was kind of scary looking. You know, it was ominous and very domineering. And maybe it represented his character, so I don't know.
Well, now, if you look at... Now, you mentioned Adolf Hitler and architecture. Now, his buddy...
Spear,
Albert Speer, they set out, they did models of the new Berlin.
Right.
You know, the greater new Germany, right. And Germania, the new capital and all
that.
Yeah,
they were going to spread it all out, and he was the guy who was going, I guess Speer was a professional artist. I'm not sure.
He was Hitler's architect,
yeah.
And he went around, built the factories, and
yeah.
A lot of things with the Tote organization. But you look at that type of architecture, and it seems like it's, what would I call it, pseudo-Grecian? Have you noticed?
Yeah, I think they're neoclassical type. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like they like the empires of maybe Rome and Greek, and maybe they tried to bring that back in the architecture. And maybe Speer probably was able to approach Hitler with that, because that's something I think Hitler would like. I think Hitler was kind of a classicist in certain...
A wannabe classicist?
No, a wannabe. He was a wannabe, yeah, on that.
Well, because he didn't become an artist, he became
yeah.
an author of Mein Kampf.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, he was like one of the first maybe self-publishers. I don't know.
Now, there's one thing. Do you notice there's a dominant element in the Eisenhower paintings, you know, from what you've seen, and the Churchill paintings? Have you noticed that it's all nature, bucolic? Would that represent another part of their personality that they're striving to enhance, or shall we say?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, because psychologically they saw a lot, especially Eisenhower, especially Churchill too. They saw a lot of devastation, a lot of wars,
mm-hmm.
And you know, knowing that Winston Churchill was a depressive, maybe he went to nature to feel better, and that might have been it. Because I mean, you know, they're dropping bombs on London, and you know, and you know, that was terrible, terrible times, and maybe he reached out to nature, and that's why you don't see a lot of depression in there. And Eisenhower's is, I think they're very mid-century American paintings. They're mm-hmm. kind of like, some of his stuff is kind of reminiscent of a bad Rockwell Kent, you know, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. But he was strictly realistic. There was no real abstraction involved in his work, and you know, he was a president who liked to paint. And presidents and generals tend to be not super artistic people, but they're, you know, it's a great passion and a great great pastime for people.
Yeah, I don't think Patton was
Patton was an aristocrat.
He was a sailor. He sailed to Hawaii,
right.
From Southern California,
yeah.
By himself, and loved horses. He designed guns.
Yeah.
And tanks and uniforms.
He even designed a uniform.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I guess it would be army fashion.
Yeah, it didn't get very far. He probably wasn't a very good
Right, no, they didn't like that tanker's uniform.
He was a good general, but a lousy designer.
Yeah. Now, the other interesting thing is a picture of Eisenhower at the end of World War II in one of the caves where the Nazis had stored some of the stolen artworks and sculpture. And he's looking at, I wonder, have you heard anything about his reaction to all this major art theft?
Oh, you mean all the loot that they...
The loot.
Now, this was the stuff the Nazis took?
Right.
I didn't know what his opinion was on it, but I maybe as an amateur artist, you know, I'll bet you he was interested, because some of that stuff was... Some of the stuff they took was really good art.
And it's never been recovered. Now, also,
yeah.
I forgot about Hermann Göring. He went around... In fact, there's a movie, it's fictional, but it's called The Train with Burt Lancaster, and what happened when the Nazis realized that the Allies were going to overrun France and kick them back
right.
into Germany, he played the Nazi colonel who had an artistic eye, and he sent all his minions around to the museums in Paris, especially the Louvre, to loot the paintings and put them on this train. And the French resistance learned about it, and they decided not to damage the paintings, but to stop the train by blowing up the tracks. And it was called The Train,
But that was based on history. Huh?
Yes, I mean the Göring went. He had a place called Karrenhal, and every place the Nazi armies were encamped and had taken over these countries, he looted art from the aristocrats, the churches, the Jews. Everybody got it was equal opportunity theft by the Nazis.
Right, and you know, I mean, when you're, you know, during war, sometimes money's not worth anything, but art usually holds its value. So that's kind of that might have been his thinking. Plus, he might have been an art lover.
Yeah, I should look into that further. I mean, they call him Derdicky. You know, in World War I, he flew with the Red Baron. He was very thin, good-looking guy.
Right.
But then he became gross and accused... They accused him of pedophilia, too. It's quite interesting. Well, all these Nazis were weird. Now, we discussed in the earlier interview about the Lord Elgin marbles and this theft and destruction of a country's artistic heritage. Do you still think that the British should give back the Elgin marbles to the Greeks?
Well, I think something as important as the Elgin marbles probably should be returned. There's always looting that goes on between empires and such. And one empire's on, you know, if you're weak, it's like the bully comes over and takes your lunch. That's basically what England was, probably very strong at that time historically. Greece was weak, but when the wars are over, you should possibly, I think they should be given back to the country of origin, especially something as important as that. And it's kind of ironic that they're named the Elgin Marbles after the guy who stole them.
Yeah, Lord Elgin. I think Lord Byron was over there. The Greeks were under the thumb of the boot of the Ottoman Turks, and there were a lot of problems. Excuse me.
We'll continue with this. It's a long interview on Friday when we do the best of the week and the rest of the week. And so we're going to end now with our theme, which is very relevant to our topic today.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the gun.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker. Politics and poker. Shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children. He's a game in luck.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrade.
Yeah, a lot of trades going on in Washington. This is Peter Paul Brazola. We'll be back Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we'll continue with the interview with Professor James Gleason. We'll be talking about the father of modern psychiatry and the relationship to Adolf Hitler and other interesting topics, and we'll update you on, as well as important births, deaths, and events on that date. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.